Hello, today is Thursday, July 30th, 2009. My name is Matt Montaigne. You're about to listen to a podcast recording from a conversation that I had with Damian Berryessa, Kevin Jarrett, Chris Becha, and Patrick Wozner and his MICDS faculty. The topic of the conversation was online citizenship or digital citizenship, and we spent the better part of 60 minutes sharing our experiences and thoughts on this topic in kind of a round robin kind of panel format. The neat thing about this was we all connected via Skype for audio, and then we used TinyChat for the video part of the presentation. And I have to say, I've been on many Skype calls where we don't have video. And the video aspect added quite a bit to this conversation. So, without further delay and ado, here is the recording from today's kind of virtual panel discussion on the topic of digital citizenship with Patrick Wozner, his MICDS faculty, and Damian, Kevin, Chris, and myself. Thanks.
Well, I hope this is worth your while. We'll start here in a minute. We'll see if Damien can join us. I'm actually squatting down on the floor. I've kind of got the webcam pointed out at the audience here. I'll explain what we've done this morning, and then we can get into it. We have some teachers here from, the youngest of grades all the way up through, high school, and from a couple different schools. And we've been talking about social media and trying to foster responsible use, because we think it's important that kids not only be given technology for academic purposes, but we know they use it outside of the classroom. It's a part of their life. And what we're really wrestling with is how do we take that on and see that kids don't just come out of school being tech savvy in terms of schooling, but self-taught in terms of the other pieces of it. So we wanted to get some other voices, and they've been listening to me, and we've had some good conversation this morning, but you guys were kind enough to get up and some of you very, very early and share your thoughts. So maybe we can go ahead and Damien can join us in progress. But if you guys want to go around and tell folks who you are, where you're from, what you do, we'll get the introductions out of the way. And then we can get down to some questions from the group here, because I think they probably have some things they'd like to hear your thoughts on. So, Matt, you were the convener. Do you want to go ahead and get us started? We'll just go around the virtual room.
Sure, I'd be happy to, Pat, and thanks a lot for having me participate. I certainly look forward to this conversation, and I'm glad that from Palo Alto, California, that in some small way I'm able to kind of collaborate with you and your group of teachers there. So my name is
My
Matt
name is Matt
Montaigne.
Montaigne.
I work at an independent school in Palo Alto, California called the Castilea School. It's probably very similar to MICDS. But we're grade 6 through 12. We're an all-girls school. We have about 60 students at each grade level, and we're wrestling with many of the same topics and ideas that you all are wrestling with at MICDS, and that actually we're all wrestling with. So I guess there's just one quote that I came across on Twitter today that I think is fairly relevant to our conversation right now, and it was a retweet by Susan Carter Morgan, who works at an independent school in Virginia. And this Twitter message says, "We can only teach students to be safe in this world if we are in it with them." So I think that's kind of appropriate for our conversation here today, and I'm sure it's something we'll come back to. But I'll pass it on. I'll pass it on to the Southern Hemisphere, where Chris will do his introduction.
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me okay? My name is Chris Becher, and I'm a teacher. Actually, I'm an ICT integrator, so I have been a teacher, but now I'm working as an integrator, so I spend most of my day around helping teachers integrate technology effectively. And I work with grades reception, which is pre-kindergarten, all the way through to year 12. The school I'm at is a fairly large, fairly, I guess, affluent, independent K-6 girls, K-12 girls school in Sydney. The school's been around for 120 years. It's one of Sydney's most established, sort of, I guess, well-respected girls' schools, Presbyterian Ladies' College. We do a fair bit with Web 2 and social media in terms of trying to get comfortable with working in an online world. We have a laptop program for our Year 6 students, and we're about to put laptops through Year 12. I guess eventually we're looking at the whole school being one-to-one. With that move to one-to-one comes a huge responsibility to teach kids to use the technology effectively, and collaborative technologies, Web 2 technologies, social technologies, whatever you want to call them, play a huge part in getting kids to work responsibly in that environment. So that's my intro.
All right, should we have Damien do his thing?
Hi, hi everybody. My name is Damien Barryexa. We got it? Okay.
Sounds great.
Wonderful. All right, I've muted my mic in Tiny Chat. We should be okay. Sorry I'm a bit late. Am I just introducing myself now? Okay. Again, my name is Damien Barryexa. I live in Perkasie, Pennsylvania. I am a former high school English teacher and a current school psychologist. And I have been using Web 2.0 and read-write web technologies for the past few years, probably about two and a half years, with my high school students, grades 9 through 12 plus.
All right, I guess that means it's my turn. Pat, I can't see the audience from here, but show of hands, how many people are in the room that were in my session back in June? Anyone? 2, 3, 6, 9, 0? Because I was in that very room in June doing a session at Pat's school. And I'm just curious if there's anybody here that remembers from then. Okay, new crowd. Excellent. Then I'll introduce myself. That's great. Thanks, Pat. My name is Kevin Jarrett. I am a K-4 technology facilitator at Northfield Elementary School in Northfield, New Jersey, which is about 50 miles west of Philadelphia and a few miles east of Atlantic City. I'm in my 7th year teaching. I'm a classroom teacher based in a lab. I see every elementary student once a week for 42 minutes. Unfortunately, it's not long enough. And I've been working with Web 2.0 and social media pretty intensively in the last several years, and my interests currently are very quickly becoming focused on social media. And this year specifically, I'm going to be doing more work with our district. We last year started a newspaper, a middle school newspaper media club that was based that uses the Ning profile, the Ning software, to give the kids an opportunity to learn safe social networking practices. We actually presented about that newspaper media club at NEC. We had a student showcase, and several of our students, including my daughter, who was in the club, happened to go down to D.C. with us, which was wonderful. And I'm really looking forward to telling you all about our media club, which, without saying too much right now, is making my school a little nervous, to be honest.
Okay, I've got us unmuted on this end. Am I coming through okay? Okay, great.
Yep, that's good.
So you can't really see the size of the crowd here. We've got teachers kind of spread over a big space in the 7th and Tonga. It's a pretty big room.
But I think you've got a nice introduction and what you do. Do you want to start a little bit by talking about some of the issues and challenges and successes at your individual schools, and then maybe jump into some questions from the group here?
And we can take these really in any order.
If somebody wants to start. So I think what we're really struggling is we know it's important,
and we've tried some things.
But sometimes we're kind of operating in a vacuum and not really knowing what other schools are doing and what's worked and what hasn't worked, and if you've got any pearls of wisdom and any experience to share. So maybe we could spend a few minutes on that, and then I think we're going to have some questions from the folks behind you. So
I'm going to mute again, and I'll use the chat. If somebody wants to take the lead and start off with a little expert advice, that would be great.
Yep, sure. I'll start if that's okay. I'll start off by saying we have a fairly open policy at our school in that we don't filter much. We filter the screamingly obvious stuff, the porn, the hate, the racial, the obvious blacklisted stuff. But beyond that, we don't filter. And by and large, we don't have any issues. So in terms of kids accessing stuff, it's a very open approach. I don't know, I've always found that a part of teaching becomes an expectation that kids will do the right thing rather than the wrong thing. And so we draw all of our decision-making based on this idea that the majority of kids will do the right thing rather than assuming that the majority of kids will do the wrong thing. And we can deal with the incidences as they occur. And the truth is there isn't that many incidents to deal with. They're very rare. And when they do, we deal with them on a one-to-one basis, which is, I think, how it should be dealt with. Because the alternative approach to that is to just say, okay, we don't trust any of you to do the right thing, and you filter and block and restrict and limit, and of course everybody loses out. So I'll put that in as a baseline statement and throw it back to the others and maybe get some feedback on those thoughts.
I'm happy to follow that up, Chris. At my school, this is my first year in the Bay Area at Castilea School, and I came from a school where we filtered fairly heavily, where we blocked YouTube at one point. Eventually, we opened up YouTube. So it was a fairly heavily filtered academic computing environment. And then I've moved to this new school in the Bay Area, and we don't filter at all. And I have to say that what I've observed is entirely in line with what you just mentioned. We have far fewer discipline issues now that at this school in comparison to my previous school where we filtered very heavily. And I think that primarily comes from the fact that we're not caught in playing this cat and mouse game with the students. We're not caught in this game of trying to block sites, and then they use the latest proxy to get around that site, and then we block that proxy. At Castilea, we focus on education, and I think that is the real value in being at a site that doesn't filter. I would have to say I would totally agree with you. We've actually probably had more inappropriate use from adults than we have from students. I mean, listen, students just aren't going to use computers at the school or their own personal computers like they do at our school, and they're allowed to connect to the network. They're pretty savvy. They're pretty smart. If they're going to horse around and mess around, they're certainly not going to do it on the school network. And we have had situations where that has happened, but we've had very, very few issues. And like Kevin's a project with the school newspaper, we started something last year where we have a live internet radio show where our students actually do kind of what we're doing now, but it's an op-ed style radio program called the Gator Radio Experience. And we use many free and open tools. We use Skype to connect. We use Ustream to broadcast. And a lot of really bad things could happen there, right? Kids could say a bunch of really dumb things. But like Chris mentioned earlier, if the expectation is that we're going to expect everybody in our community, adults and youth alike, to use these spaces and tools and platforms in very meaningful, creative, and powerful ways, then guess what? I think more times than not, that's what's going to happen. So I'll pass it on to Kevin or Damian for some follow-up thoughts as well, and I'll mute myself.
I'll jump in on that. And I found my experience was very much the same as what I'm hearing from the first two guys, and that is when we give kids the option of the freedom to experiment, the freedom to and tell them, here's a technology, here's what you can do with it, you can use your powers for good or evil kind of thing. It seems to me that it tends, more often than not, they use their powers for good, and I'm seeing that at my previous. I saw that at my previous school where we were. I kind of had the reverse situation as as Matt described, I went from a school that was very free and very open in their filtering. Again, just basically filtered what they were required to by law, but everything else was pretty much open, including Facebook and MySpace, which was mind-blowing to some of the students. And then this past year, I started a new school where the filtering is still—it's still probably more liberal than a lot of other schools, but it's not quite to the standard of the first school. And I do hear a lot of the students talking about the proxies and talking about ways to beat the system and all that. When you remove that from the equation, when you remove the mental gymnastics the kids have to feel they have to go through to get to what they want, it really changes the atmosphere of the school, and it takes it out of the technology realm and more into basically a classroom management, classroom atmosphere kind of issue. Exactly. Where the kids know they're trusted, the kids know that the adults are not the gatekeepers or the prison guardsmen, and which doesn't mean you don't have to watch and be vigilant as a teacher, but I think that the reports of, you know, teens gone wild on the internet at school are greatly exaggerated, at least in my experience.
Yeah. Hugely exaggerated.
Okay. I definitely would like to follow up on what's been said so far. Is my audio coming through okay? Can you guys hear me okay?
Yep, sounds good.
All right, great. Yeah, and I totally agree with what you guys are saying, and it's certainly been our experience as well, that the kids, given the expectation that they're going to behave responsibly, without exception, with one minor instance where I think in our newspaper media club on the Ning, someone said, just teasing someone, that they were stupid, like that was a stupid comment. And that was the worst we had to deal with in our media newspaper club, which is based on Ning. Now, that being said, it's one thing for all of us to sit here. I know I'm a teacher. You guys are all teachers. And the room in St. Louis is all full of teachers. And it's one thing for us to say, well, you know, for the most part, kids are going to behave and everything will be great. It's something else completely for our administrators to deal with, because I can tell you that our middle school principal is nervous about what we are doing with the Ning, because when I told her that these children were allowed to post whatever they wanted without moderation, she was a little concerned. So she basically wanted to know what protections I was putting in place to prevent kids from putting names, phone numbers, personal information, whatever. My response to her was that we're training each other, and the kids are relying on each other to make sure that people aren't doing things inappropriately. And I know that works, but even that didn't appease her, because she's looking for a neck to grab. She wants to know, when something goes wrong, or if something goes wrong, who is she going to call into her office? And she can't bring the entire media club in for discipline. She wants to go to one particular individual, or in this case, me. Now, it's been great for us, because we've worked hard with the kids, and they absolutely understand what's appropriate and don't stray, other than I said with that particular comment. But the Ning, even as great as the Ning is, and that's one of my big points that I want to make sure we get across, is when you're trying to get started with social media, a Ning is an excellent starting point, because it can be a walled garden, completely private if necessary, or as in the case with tbirdtimes.org, which is the website for our media club, it can be open for the world to see, but only contributed to by people you authorize. It's an ideal platform for giving kids the training wheels they need for social networking, and it's completely free.
I'll jump in, too, to mention my experience with administrators. After I had been working with online publishing with my students for a little over a year, I was asked to present to my district's administrative team, which involves the department supervisors, the vice principals, the principal, and the superintendent as well. And what made the big difference for me going in was I knew I had the full support of my immediate supervisor, the English department supervisor, but I found that by being very open and transparent in my thinking, not only with my supervisor as I developed these projects and kind of bouncing ideas off of him as we went along, but also answering all questions open and honestly with the administrative team, by the end of it, the superintendent herself was raving about what a great idea this is. I think we should have more students doing this, which is not something that I understand happens terribly frequently in a lot of other districts. After that meeting, it was great because I knew that should I ever get challenged on any of this, I knew that I would have the backing of every administrator up the line, right up to the superintendent. A lot of the fears that we have, that administrators have and teachers have, I think, is due more to lack of knowledge of the risks, lack of knowledge of the benefits, lack of knowledge of just the mechanics of it. So by educating other folks who are other stakeholders, other people who are involved or can influence you in any way, I think the more support you build for your program that way.
Yep. Agreed. U.S. school districts, and I taught Canada for a while, and I guess that's kind of similar, this whole notion of a district and the administrators at the district level sort of who are a little bit disconnected from what's going on in schools is a really kind of unique phenomenon. In Australia, it doesn't quite work the same way. So I pity you guys sometimes who have to deal with this whole district administration thing. It's it's uniquely restricting. I've just been making a couple of notes just while you guys have been talking. I'm just trying to get my head around the sorts of social media projects that we're doing with our kids. And just to run through the list really quickly, year twos at the moment, so we're talking six-year-olds, seven-year-olds, are doing podcasting, which they're publishing to the web. Year three are doing a VoiceThread project at the moment, which we're actually inviting comments back from the open web. Which are moderated. We protect the kids with things like they only use cartoon avatars of themselves. They don't use any real names, obviously. So that's the year three kids. By the time they get to year four, they do a lot of blogging. We actually use, but decided that in the interests of maintaining enough control over what the kids were doing, we moved that to an internal WordPress server, so we essentially run our own Edge blogs internally, and we can manage all that stuff internally. One of the things we did do with that was the kids run that as in a completely anonymous mode, so they don't use any names, they don't use real photos of themselves, and they're drilled very heavily about their need to blog responsibly and understand this idea that if you put yourself out on the internet, you better be really careful about what information you reveal. And they're very good at it. We run that on our internal blogging platform. In year five, the kids do projects with things like Scratch, which again is social in the sense that they create projects which they upload to the Scratch server and they pull other people's projects down. So there's certainly interaction and the ability to socially connect through the Scratch platform. By year six, as I mentioned, we have a one-to-one project where the kids are given laptops, netbook computers, Lenovo S10s, and they do a lot of stuff with, they use Skype. In fact, I heard from a parent yesterday that Skype is revolutionising the way these kids are doing homework, that they'll sit at home and they'll, you know, in groups at their own homes, they'll open up a Skype connection like we're doing right now, and I'll sit there and they'll just talk themselves through homework. The parent was saying it's completely revolutionised the way her child approaches homework, and she loves doing that work from home now, which is interesting. When they get to the senior school, we use wikis a lot. There's a lot of collaborative type stuff with kids working on wiki projects and that type of thing. We use Ning a fair bit for various projects because it's a great closed environment, as Kevin was saying. Our principal is really big on the use of mobile technology, so we encourage the use of mobile phones. We don't ban them. In fact, we run two wireless networks at school. One's the official one and one's called VLC Mobile, which is pretty open. It's not proxied. It basically, if a kid comes in with an iPhone or a laptop or any kind of mobile device and brings it up to our tech department, we'll happily put it on that wireless network so they have full access to the web from within the school grounds. We've been trying to do experiments with the way kids use mobile technology. In fact, we've run exams and not really exams, but assessment tasks where the kids are encouraged to use mobile connections and mobile technology in order to do those assessments. And along with that, we've been encouraged to run social media nights for parents, because a lot of parents are struggling to get to grips with this as well. So we've run several nights where we get parents to come in and we'll actually go through and we'll show them Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and talk about the sorts of benefits we're getting from those technologies in the classrooms, and educate the parents, because often they don't know either. So that's just a quick rundown of some of the things we're doing.
That's a tough act to follow there, Chris. I just texted in the room what an impressive portfolio, spiraling portfolio of work going on in your learning community. I think you hit on something there that I think we're all kind of tuning into more and more, and that's the parent piece. And it's been a professional interest of mine for quite some time, because I think oftentimes, wrongfully, actually, parents are used as a perceived barrier to innovation. And I think sometimes in schools we say, well, we can't do that because parents, you know, will hear from the parents, or the parents expect a fairly an experience that's fairly similar to the one that they had in school. And you know, a small percentage of the parents might have some serious issues with, you know, the use of, or like a project that I'm doing at my school, like Gator Radio. But are we going to do we continue to make decisions based upon those, that very small percentage of the parents, or do we do what's right for most people? But I think the parent. When you do sessions like Chris described, when you bring parents in and you do some workshops or maybe some sustained workshops over time, which I think is a wonderful model for parents, I think that they really, really get it. They understand that it's our job to prepare the kids for their future, not our past. They really do get that, I think. Now, somebody might push back and contend beyond that one, but in my experiences with parents in Milwaukee, where I taught for 12 plus years, and then here in the Silicon Valley in the Bay Area, it has nothing to do with region or location. Parents want an engaging school experience for their children. The other thing that I've noticed too is that parents really appreciate transparency. They appreciate being able to interact with, and not in a prying, hovering sort of way at all, but they appreciate being able to interact with the work that their children are doing at schools. And I have to think that by being able to interact with the work that that their children are doing, that those dinner table conversations have to be different. So instead of the question, what did you do at school today, it's, oh, that debate that you participated in school today, or that scratch project that I saw you working on with Johnny and Sarah or whatever was fantastic. So I just think that that the transparency that this platform known as the internet and maybe Web 2.0 affords us changes the kinds of conversations that are and deepens the learning and extends the learning in ways that we didn't predict, and we don't know, quite honestly, because we can't measure those kinds of dinner table conversations. But I'll stop talking and pass it over to somebody else.
Yeah, actually, I'd love to follow up if I can on what Matt just said. Alan November at NEC made an excellent point. And what we're doing right now is a wonderful illustration of the possibility. Imagine telling the parents in your class that they can tune in and watch and participate in a school presentation. Imagine having parents watching your third grader do their animal report presentation using this technology, which is TinyChat. You could give out a password-protected URL to all the parents, and they could tune in from work and watch the kids present. And Alan's point was, you want to see the kids amp up the effort level? It'll go off the charts when they know their parents are going to be watching. So, and the same thing is similarly true with tools like Skype, but Skype you have to download and there's firewall issues. TinyChat is a wonderful example of how you can break down those walls and bring people into school to see what's happening and increase their comfort level, because you're absolutely right. the parent comfort level is what we need to work on. Because unfortunately, although you can have a lot of support in a district, all it takes in most districts is a single parent or a couple of different parents to make enough of a stink about something that's happening to shut down an otherwise innovative program. So it's imperative that you build support in the community for what you're doing. The parents understand more than a lot of the teachers do, and a lot of administrators unfortunately do, about the need and necessity for this type of education, for preparing them for their future, not our past. So by building those relationships and having a strong community behind you, you're going to be much more successful when you adopt advanced technologies like using social networking in school.
I'll jump in.
Can I just jump on one thing in there? Oh, you go, Damien. I'll come in after you.
No, go ahead, Chris.
No, you go.
Okay, thank you. I'll just jump on Kevin's point about parent involvement, parent transparency. I had an inkling that my forays into having my students publish on the internet would be relatively well received in my community, because going back to my first year of teaching, which was 2000-2001, when I had a website up, just listed the homework assignments for the week. That was, you know, groundbreaking at the time to those parents, and I got a lot of positive feedback about, oh, it's so good to be able to follow what's going on, even though it was a very very passive, very one-way information flow. There's a connection that they felt they were able to make that didn't exist before, and I think that taking it to the next level involves technology like the social networking, Skype, and, you know, publishing to wikis, publishing via blog, that the parents are able to follow. And when you use a technology like RSS, the parents, you know, if they're suitably aware of the technologies, or we educate them suitably, you can teach them how to follow you know, a million different things in one central location through the use of a feed reader like Google Reader or NetVibes. Kevin also mentioned breaking down the walls and inviting the outside world, and I'll give a very brief anecdote from when I was teaching honors British literature in the last year or so. Part of that class involved me talking about the history of the English language, and one of my students, you know, kind of tangentially related, you know, asked me about Welsh, and I don't know anything. I know enough about Old English and Middle English to teach it, but I knew nothing about it. So I'm thinking of, you know, I'm going home at that later that day thinking about how I can best, you know, answer the student's question without, you know, saying, you know, go look it up yourself, which is also a, you know, an acceptable answer sometimes. But I wanted to go a little deeper than that. Sorry?
That's a valid answer.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But in this case, I wanted to see if I could do something a little more. So I ended up, long story very short, I have an acquaintance who lives in Wales, actually, teaches at a middle school in Wales, and I was able to use Skype to bring him into my classroom. This project involved a lot of pre-writing and brainstorming on the part of my students, writing, and he was able to come in and speak to my class for an hour via Skype, probably in the same way that we're doing now, where his head was broadcast on a 6x6 screen on our classroom wall through an overhead projector hooked up to my tablet PC. And the kids in my class were all grouped in the middle of the room, and I had a little handheld microphone that we passed around, kind of like a talk show. And it was an interesting experience because, yeah, I could have gone home. I could have said, look it up. I could have researched it myself and kind of regurgitated my research to them. But this technology allowed me, for the price of a handheld microphone, to have a primary source right in my classroom, a guest speaker who could speak from personal experience about the language, about the culture, and about other related sociopolitical issues that the kids had questions about.
Well, I will jump in on that because just with the parent thing, if I can just come back to that for a moment. We had an incident. I mentioned that we're fairly open at PLC and you know, we deal with the incidences that crop up, and there's been very few. In fact, really only one that springs to mind, where we had an incident towards the end of last year where, I'm greatly simplifying this for brevity, but basically there was an incident with a girl outside of school on the Bebo social networking platform, and the parent got very upset about it because it implicated her daughter in a whole lot of things. So they came in with the guns blazing into the principal's office saying, we want you know, they found out apparently that our network doesn't block Bebo, and we don't block Facebook, and we don't block all this stuff. And they were livid about that, despite the fact that this incident happened on a Saturday at home over the weekend at their computers. Like, let them block Bebo at their place. But they came in and insisted that, no, all this needs to be blocked. You're very irresponsible. You're allowing this stuff to be open. And we kind of... I was impressed with my school because they had the cojones to stand up to the parent and say, you know what, that's not our policy. Our policy is one of openness and liberal education. And we're not going to cave in just because you don't like it. So that was actually a big part of the trigger towards running these social media information nights for parents. And what we found with running those evenings is that, you know, although this one tried to hijack the thing and, you know, poison everybody about how bad social technologies were, the Majeed parents were perfectly intelligent enough to understand that, no, it's important that you actually allow kids to create a positive digital footprint. And really, that's the approach that we're taking with all of this is, it's not a question of will your child be on Facebook, will your child have a MySpace account, will your child, you know, have some sort of digital imprint on the online world. They will. That's a given. So that's not even up for discussion. What's up for discussion is, will it be a good impression or a bad impression? And if we take the same approach to online education that, you know, we used to take with sex education, there's going to be a lot of virtual pregnancy, so to speak. You know, you don't educate kids about uncomfortable subjects like sex education by not telling them anything about it, not informing them how to use, you know, what responsible practice is. And I extend the analogy into the online world and say, you know, you don't get kids having an ongoing, long-term digital footprint by pretending this stuff doesn't exist. It does, and we have to get better at making sure that they understand how to... you know, make sure that what they leave behind them, the footprints they leave behind them in the online world, are positive, not negative. Because one day they'll be sitting at a desk with an employer, Googling their name and things about them. And the question is, will the things they find be good or will they be bad? Back to you.
Yeah, that's an excellent, excellent point. If I could jump in, Chris, that it completely summarizes the early reaction I've gotten to some of the social networking that I've tried to do years ago. In fact, our current superintendent, who right now is very open to some of the initiatives that I have on the table, was renowned to tell me years ago when I wanted to implement IMBE, which is a wonderful free service, by the way, if you're interested in looking, imbe.com. I believe they're still viable. It's basically MySpace for kids with parent interaction built in. Her reaction to me was that she didn't want to teach the kids how to do social networking because then they would want to, which is the classic argument against sex ed. So she feels differently now, and I think I've earned her trust over the years so that she recognizes the value of making those connections. But in many districts, that's exactly the scenario. They're just so afraid that encouraging these kids by educating them is going to create issues where, in fact, the opposite is true, as we have already seen. If we don't teach them, they're going to learn on their own from friends, from older siblings, from friends of older siblings, and they're not going to get the messages the way we can provide them, and that's just a terrible, terrible situation. On the age 13 issue, I put this in the chat. I'm not sure if everybody saw it, but I'll just state for everybody. The laws that right now prevent children under 13 from registering and participating in a lot of sites can be circumvented very easily. And the way you do that is by having the school create the accounts. The law says, the essence of the laws here in the U.S. is that the child under 13 cannot create the account. No problem. Have the school create the account. Even better, create the account with a pseudonym or non-personally identifying information. We do that with the Ning that we use for the media club. We also do that with Google Apps for eighth graders. So the school is effectively the custodian of that account, much as a parent would be if the child was signing up at home. Now, as long as the teachers understand what the implications are there and we've done sufficient training for the kids to know how to behave responsibly, it's all good. But that's the key, having the school be the one in control.
Yeah, I agree. And that one of the issues, certainly with the voice thread stuff, the school signs the kids up under the ed.voice service. So around that issue. With the blogging and stuff, well, we run our own server. So essentially our server, our rules. We allow kids to sign up under 13 because we control it. It's an issue, that under 13 thing. But your solutions are the right ones.
When I had set my 17 and 18-year-old signing up for Wikispaces to create content on our course wikis, what I used to do was create their login names, kind of how Kevin described. I would do a mashup of their first and their last name. So if my name is Damian Barry X, I would take D-A-M from the first name and B-A-R from the last name, and I would put the prefix H-C-H on it for Hunterdon Central High, which is where I taught. So my login name would be H-C-H Dambar. Kevin's might be HCH Kevjar or something like that, which preserves the anonymity of the student while also allowing them to go online and create content and publish and have their work
great idea.
Publicly available.
We're not nearly that creative. We just use their user ID numbers.
Which is even better because, you know, whatever works, right? One other thing just to mention, you guys, Chris and Kevin, have been mentioning the sex ed debate. And I think that when you're talking with parents, when you're talking with administrators, when you're talking with other educators, you know, classroom teachers who are offering reasons why not to do this stuff, I think that that's a great technique, is reframing the debate. You know, think about right around April, May, June every year, how many news stories we see about yearbooks that have to be recalled due to some kids snuck in curse words on page 14, or I know there was one here in the U.S. This I think just this past year, where there were yearbooks with racial slurs found in them, and they had to be recalled. So again, that kind of goes back to the topic we were talking about at the top of the chat, and that is that it's not a question of the medium, it's not a question of the tool you're using, but rather how you use it and what your expectations are and what guidelines you provide for the students. Will there be missteps? Yes, of course there will, I think.
Speaking of media, one of the other things that really helps to sway parental opinion is good PR. And there's an article that appeared in yesterday's paper. I don't know whether you can see that on the screen or not. But that was
cool.
An article that published in yesterday's news about our Year 6 students and how they're using Skype for homework and Skype for school stuff. Good PR makes a big difference. That came out in the morning paper, and, you know, within a couple of hours, I had emails from parents congratulating us on, the work with their kids and telling us stories about how this technology and what the kids are doing is just revolutionizing their daughter's approach to school and their attitude to school and how they're really enjoying it and they're engaged with it and they're, doing interesting stuff that the kids really love. In fact, the article starts with talking about the fact that one of the girls that was interviewed for the story, her father's a lawyer, and yet the daughter comes home and shows dad how to use Skype and tells dad how effective Skype could be for something like, his legal practice, which is a great angle.
I had a chat with somebody. Yep, I'm on. I had a chat with somebody who has in a private school in Texas who is now using they're now using Skype to have their students conduct college interviews long distance. It's a pretty exclusive private school, and from what I understand, the students there, sometimes after the cost of tuition, they're not all terribly wealthy, so after the cost of tuition every year, there's not always a lot left to go around. So what the guidance department there has been doing is setting up Skype interviews for college applications with their students. They go to their guidance counselor's office, get set up with a computer and a microphone and a headset like we have, and they'll speak with a college admissions representative from wherever. If they're in Texas, the college could be in Alaska, the college could be in New Jersey, college could be in California, and it's very not too terribly different from actually going out, flying out there and having their interview, except it's a heck of a lot cheaper.
I think we're going to see a lot more of that, Damian. This past year, in the fall, we actually had one of our students who was applying to Yale in their theater program. What she had to do was to submit a monologue on YouTube as part of her college, the college admissions process at Yale. I think we're going to see more and more of this going forward. And won't it be helpful if our students are practiced and are coached and mentored, just as we as adults have always done post-internet or pre-internet days? We've always mentored youth. That's been our role. We make mistakes too, and they make mistakes, and that's been our role. But won't it be great when we really get in there and engage and mentor students so that when they're required, it won't be too far off? I mean, Kevin, you're a Google Teacher Academy participant. I just went through the application process. We had to submit a video to be accepted into that process. I think we're going to see that more and more going forward. So I just think to the extent that we as adults mentor youth in whatever medium that might be, I think that's only going to be a helpful thing going forward.
Well, I've unmuted here because
I'm wondering if we've got some questions maybe from the group.
They've listened to
so much, both from me and from you, and I'm sure they've got some things that they'd like to know more about. So let me turn it over to my teachers here and see if we've got some queries that they'd like to put
before the group.
So the questions you have to ask.
Oh, Matt's waving him on.
Well.
When you get done, if you just hit the mute thing on the Skype,
okay.
Just mute it when you're done asking the question. So.
Hi, I teach kids kindergarten through fourth grade in drama, and not a ton of, except for things that we might produce to show each other, but not a ton of Skyping or anything that's going on currently. But I'm thinking about a generational thing, and a lot of what we talked about this morning was just wrapping our heads around what's a new paradigm for adults, people that enter this world. It's like a second world. And I'm thinking how easily my kids picked up computer, my personal kids, you know, my kids at home picked up computer skills without thinking about it, without questioning it. It's part of their real world. And when I spend a long time online, I feel like I've lost time to home. I've lost time that could, you know, usually it's work related. But I think we've got a generation of people that these worlds are more integrated. And I wonder what you guys do to get kids, or if maybe, I see we were talking about the philosophical leap you have to take when you put yourself online and you have to decide, what do I share? How do I protect myself? What was me, and now someone could find out, you know, that privately I'm into this, that, or the other, and then you got students or former students or someone who could find that on Facebook or whatever. Where's that integration? You know, do you have conversations with kids about who you are when you're online and who you are when you are in the real world, and what you lose or gain in either place? It's kind of a huge philosophical question. But I think it's something parents and the adult world are going to have to grapple with, I guess, to get on board, to be able to jump in with 2 feet as well.
I think I can speak to some of that. It's an excellent question. I think that as far as transparency goes, that's something that I've wrestled with since I started becoming involved in online activities myself for my own professional learning. When I started, I tried to go anonymous because that was kind of, you know, I've been online in one form or another since 1992. Okay, so and I was 16 years old and I was dialing BBSs in my local area, and that back then kind of the standard mode was you come up with a handle, you come up with an alter ego online identity, and then you go from there. So when I started getting involved in some of this stuff right around late 2006, early 2007. I tried to go anonymous, and I found that the deeper down the rabbit hole I went, you know, the more involved I got in these online communities and sharing of ideas and sharing of resources, and I felt that anonymity wasn't something personally that I was felt equipped to hold on to, and I made the decision to go whole hog and go transparent all the way using my real name on everything. The handle I usually go by is Damien613. It's my birthday. Not terribly imaginative, but it's something that's linked to my identity. If you when I give speeches and presentations on this stuff, I ask teachers to if they've ever Googled themselves and see what they come up with. What I and one of the slides, one of my go-to slides, is I've Googled myself, and of the first 100 entries on Google for my name, only two of the sites are sites that I did not have a direct hand in creating the content, either through my own writing or my own photography, or I was being interviewed and I was able to, you know, verbally give answers to questions and shape the content. The only two that didn't belong to me were two sites like Rate My Teachers. Okay, everything else was something that I generated, and thankfully one's empty and the other one was pretty complimentary, so I can't complain too much. It's definitely a philosophical leap that you have to make, and it's not something you can shoot. Some people choose to just dive in head first. Some people like to wade in. It's kind of like that old Reese's commercial. There's no wrong way to do it. You know, you have to do it in a way that is comfortable to you. Otherwise, if it's uncomfortable, you're not going to do it any longer, and it's going to be more of a hassle than it will be enjoyable. And I think that's something that is, for me, it's enjoyable to get online and meet these people and be involved in a conference call with folks from other states and other countries and share ideas about learning and education.
Yeah, I have to agree with Damien. I don't actually draw much of a distinction between the online world and the offline world. Like Damien, if you Google my name, you'd probably find the first 80 or 100 hits are all something to do with me, much like what Damien described. And I can speak from my own experience to say that's been a damn good thing. I know a huge number of doorways have opened to me because people have become aware of the sorts of things I've been involved with online that would never have opened had I been anonymous. And, you know, absolutely, when kids are sort of, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, yes, we have to give them some degree of anonymity. We have to protect them in that sense. But as they get older, it's actually a good thing that they develop an online footprint as themselves. It's going to happen anyway. And I think they need to transition out of those early childhood years into young adult and actually develop a digital footprint that is positive. Damien just put in there about the domain names. So I bought my children last year for their birthday domain names, alexbetcher.com and katebetcher.com. They have those domain names. And they're not, my son's not using his, but my daughter is. She's a singer, and she tried to raise money for a trip overseas recently, and she put some YouTube videos of herself singing online on a wiki, linked it to katebetcher.com, and stuck a PayPal button on there and asked for donations. So she was virtual busking. The kid made $900 in virtual donations, just from twittering out a few requests for people for some assistance. So this is powerful technology that lets kids do some amazing things, and there's only so far I think you really want to hide behind anonymity, and at some point you actually want to start making this online world work for you. So, just some thoughts there.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and I think that the sooner we give people the message that they need to control what's their online identity by populating it full of positive examples of their work, their writing, their creativity, other things, the better off we'll be. I just saw a video clip, I think Will Richardson may have shared it, or someone else shared it, where a student was reflecting on their experience in the classroom on a project, and she was so proud of the fact that when you Googled her name, this particular project was what came up on the internet, as opposed to some MySpace page or something else. And you could really tell that she was taken by the fact that, first of all, it was accessible to the world. Second of all, she was so proud of it that it was a piece of work, a schoolwork that she had invested so much time in. And third, that she was setting a great example for all the other kids in school that are like, you know, the internet is actually a useful thing. You can do amazing stuff with it and build your online reputation. I just dropped a link into chat, in Tiny Chat, for a YouTube video that's called Think Before You Post, which you may have seen before. It's a public service announcement. And it's excellent because it really does a great job of explaining the dangers of what may to children seem as a innocent activity of just posting a picture. The only downside for the video is at the very end, there's a sort of an evil-looking janitor which is an unfortunate slight in a very hardworking member of our school communities. But the video itself is excellent, and I definitely recommend you check it out.
Is that the one where the girl puts the photo on the notice board and then keeps pulling pictures down? And
that's the one.
Okay.
That's the one. That's great stuff.
It's a good video. Yep. Anyone else got any questions in the chat room?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. That's what I'm doing is I'm soliciting if there's other folks that want to step up and ask a question. So give me a second here. And I also want to be mindful of your time because we – didn't really set a time limit. I was thinking maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, and we're past that. And that's fine from our end, but I know you guys are busy men. So I'll see if we've got another question here, and then we'll decide where to go from there. So,
no worries. While you're thinking, can I just relay one little story? Our U5s were doing a project last year on Antarctica, and a lot of delay. And I was just going to say so they're looking at Antarctica, and so we open up Google Earth and we revolve the world around and we look at Antarctica from the south end of the planet, and turn on the layer with the YouTube videos, and all the YouTube videos populate Google Earth, and so we're looking at some videos, and there was one particularly good time lapse thing there, so we were amazed at that. So we clicked on that and went through to the YouTube page and found out that the person who put up the video has a blog. So we clicked on that and went through to their blog and found out a little bit about this person. Turns out he's a communications technology guy who works in Antarctica for 8 months of the year. And so we've clicked and left a comment on his blog and started an exchange, which then went to email. And before you know it, we've opened up a Skype call between this guy in Antarctica and our Year 5 kids. And so the kids are sitting in a classroom in Sydney asking questions of a guy who works in Antarctica about what it's like to live there and what are the penguins like and what's the biggest iceberg you've ever seen. And it's pretty cool when you can actually use these technologies to invite people into your classroom and bring the world, punch the holes and bring the world outside in. Back to you.
All right. My question is for the younger kids, because I teach early elementary as well, what you can do with them, because most of the sites are 13 and up, and I know that you can make them. Oh, he's got that one?
Oh, yeah.
Got All you right. Covered. I'll let you go ahead then.
Yeah, got you covered. There are many, many, many virtual worlds developing for the youngest kids. It's one of the fastest growing areas. And I know that Pat and Greg and the folks at MICDS know about many of these. One that's excellent is called Dizzywood, DizzyWood.com. It's excellent. It's free. It's a multi-user. You can set it up. We actually use it in school very effectively. There's Woogie World, WOOGIWORLD, which is also excellent. IMBY, I had mentioned earlier, I believe they're still viable. Unfortunately, the founder of IMBY and her daughter were tragically killed in a plane crash a couple of years ago, and it was a small startup. This lady was a serial entrepreneur, extremely successful, but I'm not sure if the organization is going to continue without her visionary leadership the way it was, but it's basically a MySpace model that parents and teachers control so that the kids can network safely. I'll drop them into the wiki. I have a whole host of sites that I use with the K-4 kids. There's one service that MICDS might be interested in looking into, or any district that has the resources. It's called Saywire.com, Saywire. Saywire is a walled garden, extremely powerful social networking platform for all ages that can have as much or as little privacy on it that you want. But for the littlest guys, the good news is that the websites that are most appropriate for them. Every day there's a new one that's launched that has great content, very well designed and oriented for the youngest kids. And I will get to Pat a list of my top sites for those, but the ones I mentioned are near the top.
All right, I've unmuted. I heard something from the back. What's that? Here's a question for Kevin.
Okay. Say again. Can't hear.
His question, he's kind of shy. Rich didn't want to walk up again. He said, beyond teaching technology, what are the sites really good for getting across? Is there content or skills? Oh. Is that kind of the question, Rich?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Wonderful.
They learn besides tech.
Tons. The big thing I think that the elementary school kids need to learn, and the power and the joy of being involved with this education for the youngest kids, is you can actually impact their behavior before their attitudes get ingrained. I read a study recently about specifically how girls mature and why girls, as they get older in specific, can be so vicious. And I have two daughters myself, and I've seen firsthand what it's like for those kids to grow up like that. And these things, these tendencies develop at the very earliest ages. And with this article, which was in Scientific American, which I'll dig up if Patrick reminds me, mentioned that there are biological reasons for women to behaving this way. And what I think that we need to do as educators is to give these kids an opportunity to interact with each other online and develop positive skills. And that's one of the most important things that we teach in my school when these kids are using these tools to connect. Okay, well, here you're chatting in a virtual space, and here's this other person. Now, do we know who this other person is? Yes, that's Sally. Okay, well, how do you know it's Sally? Well, because she told me her username from before school, and obviously she's sitting right here in school with me, so that's cool. So we reinforce the fact that, okay, you're talking to people that you know, great. And when you're chatting with someone, how easy is it to say something nasty on the keyboard or say something that could be construed as nasty when you don't really mean it? And, well, of course it's easy. You just type it. Well, how does that make you feel if you were the person that received it? Well, it makes me feel terrible. Well, why? Would you say that to the person's face? And most of the time the kids will say, well, no, of course not. We'll say, and that's what we need to be telling them, is that it's a lot of behavioral stuff. They need to be doing things, be maintaining their online personas the way they would face-to-face. The collaboration skills that they can develop. And although we don't play World of Warcraft with elementary kids, and I don't play World of Warcraft myself, but I do know it's very popular and growing in popularity amongst educators for its value as a collaborative learning environment, where kids need to solve puzzles in order to, or in World of Warcraft, where you need to work together on quests and stuff. But for the littlest guys, you want to be able to give them collaborative opportunities to work together to solve puzzles. We did that with the Teen Second Life Club that I had a couple of years ago. And I know that MICDS is looking at establishing an open sim server if they don't have one already, which would give the kids an opportunity to create and build and develop skills, mathematical skills, positional skills, basically how to create in an environment working together as opposed to learning content or what we call traditional book knowledge in a school. So I think there are many opportunities for learning social skills, interaction skills, internet safety. There's tons of things.
Yeah. I did a project with some kids way back in 1998 or so. It was a collaborative thing involving students from different countries. And one of the kids said at the end of that, when I did the wrap-up and asked for some feedback about what they learned, one kid somebody said, I learned to be disagreeable. I learned to disagree with someone about being let me rephrase that. I learned to disagree with someone without being disagreeable.
Disagreeable. Excellent.
And I thought, man, that was a powerful lesson. Wow, if more people learned that lesson, how to just deal with other people,
what would be a better place?
Share your worldview, yeah, the world would be a so much better place.
Sure would.
Well, gentlemen, I'm keeping one eye on the clock, and I
can't thank you enough for the time you've given up today,
and I have a feeling we could probably keep going with your insight all afternoon, but Chris
probably needs to get back to bed and get some sleep. And are you up for the day, Chris, or are you You go 99, you're done. Oh, wow.
Sleep is for the week. I don't know. I'll probably sleep.
But I'd like to thank you guys for coming in. Matt, are you recording the Tiny Chat session? Is this something that we'd be able to get an archive of later?
I did. I'll send it to you or post it somewhere so everybody will have access to it. Some people actually in Twitter were asking if this was being streamed live because they wanted
Boss
to
tweet it.
Tune in. I'll have the recorded audio at least. Perhaps if I can get around to it, have that audio synced up with the video, so you can post it wherever you'd like.
The wiki page that we built out, ultimately, even if it's just the audio, I think it'd be great to put there because I think this has been a really valuable hour plus of learning for our folks. And one of the things that we didn't get a chance to do this morning, it was kind of something I encouraged them to look at over lunch, was Will Richardson's article about your digital footprints. And I think that's probably where we're going to go after we sign off here because you guys touched on it time and again. But that's what kids really need to understand is that they are leaving footprints and that idea of object permanency, it's there. It's going to be there for a real long time. And you need to think about what kind of footprints you're leaving and where you're leaving them. And we just heard so many good things today. So I think our group here is going to take some time and deconstruct what you've said. And I think they'd be happy to go back. And I'll definitely listen to the session again. And there's some teachers that couldn't be here today that I think would really benefit from that. So you guys have been awesome. And it just goes to show. Yeah, that's applause you hear in the background. And it just goes to show, Kevin's the only one of you I've met in person, and that's because he came here. Greg actually just came in the room, Kevin, so you can say hello.
Hi, Greg.
But that's the power of the network, being able to reach out and find intelligent and good-hearted people that will take time to step up and share what they know. And I think that's a lesson for today as well, that learning is social, and our kids get that, and it's about time that the teachers came to terms with that as well. So it's been a good experience from our end, and I can't thank you enough.
No worries. Does anyone have any objections if I take the audio recording from this and use it as part of a podcast?
Not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Which raises one last issue that we never actually touched on, that there's a whole other can of worms, and that's this idea of asking permission and things like Creative Commons and copyright and issues around intellectual property, which we didn't touch on, but they're all big ethical issues that go hand in hand with living in an online world. Maybe for next
Definitely.
Time.
Definitely. Next time. I hope there is a next time. Guys, I will see you on Twitter, if not elsewhere. So.
Great.
Thank you again. I'll let you Excellent. Sign off and get out of the room. I'm going to copy and paste the transcript of the chat if I can because I've tried saving it before and I ended up with gobbledygook. So I've got it and I can pull those links out and I'll post them up a little bit later today and we should be good.
Okay. Awesome.